is the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. It is great to be back after a time of vacation with my family and time away. It's great to be back in the studio today, and there is so much to talk about. I'm looking forward to this new 2005-2006 season of the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to have a lot to talk about, and this is the place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter, and there is so much these days that really does matter. Well, let me first of all say a word of very, very sincere appreciation to Dr. Russell Moore for his excellent work serving as substitute host during the time that I was away. And it's just tremendous to have a colleague as brilliant and as dependable as Russ Moore. And you enjoyed his sense of humor, his personality, his insight, and his wisdom over the last few weeks. And it's now great to be back as well. And I want to thank my producer, Mike Pullman, and others who really the entire team pulled together to make this a reality. And we're back fresh to talk about what you want to talk about. The phone number is 1-877-893-8255. That's 1-877-893-TALK. And today's topic, when we come back in just a moment, is going to be Senator Bill Frist, the Senate Majority Leader, and his shift on the human embryonic stem cell issue. It came just at the end of last week. It caught a lot of people by surprise, but let me tell you, this is a significant issue that we ought to really consider very, very carefully. Senator Frist has broken with President Bush on the issue of stem cells. He now is siding with those who would force legislatively a change in the president's position. And we're going to look closely at what Senator Frist had to say and why it matters. And frankly, why this is such a significant disappointment to those who care for the sanctity of human life. Well, over the last couple of weeks, so much has happened. Of course, we've had the president's nomination of John Roberts to be an associate justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. We've seen the immediate aftermath of that. It's going to be interesting to follow that debate. And right now, we're in the eye of the hurricane as Congress is in recess. And you can just count on the fact that this is about to kick up into a much livelier mode in days and weeks ahead. Let me tell you something to watch for. This is something very, very significant. And just over the past weekend, there have been some significant developments that really ought to catch our attention. You can look at the op-ed pages, the editorial pages of several of our most influential newspapers, and you will notice an increased attention to two things. First of all, Roberts' faith, and secondly, John Roberts' wife. Now, I would argue that this is absolutely unprecedented. Can you imagine another situation in which a confirmation hearing anticipated in the United States Senate and the Judiciary Committee is likely to involve in any way the beliefs of one spouse? But the fact is that John Roberts' wife, who's also an attorney, has been actively involved in support of pro-life causes. And that is enough in the view of some on the pro-abortion side, advocates for abortion who are adamantly determined to protect Roe v. Wade. That's sufficient for them to decide that John Roberts ought to be disqualified from a seat on the U.S. Supreme Court. We're going to be watching this closely. And again, what we see is this playing with language as a way of disguising contempt for and discrimination against those who hold to a conservative Christian position on the sanctity of human life. And in the case of John Roberts, as is well known by now, he is a Roman Catholic. And if this is a problem for the United States Senate, it is to the extent that John Roberts actually believes in the Catholic doctrine he professes. And if it's Catholicism today and John Roberts today, it could be you and it could be your most cherished beliefs tomorrow. There is no place for religious discrimination. And when you see it camouflaged in the language of deeply held personal beliefs, you'll know we're in big trouble. Just wait and see what happens. There are those already who are suggesting that if an issue like abortion or euthanasia or same-sex marriage or anything related to sexuality should come before the court, if confirmed, Justice Roberts should recuse himself from participating in the decision-making on that court case. Now, just think about that. That insinuates that if there's anything in his deeply held personal beliefs that would be brought into the legal equation, he's disqualified. Well, what about all the rest of the justices? Have they no deeply held personal beliefs? You see, there are only specific deeply held personal beliefs that are really at stake here. And that's why we're going to have to watch this very, very closely. Speaking of watching closely, cultural trends tell us a lot about where we are and where we are going. In both the United States and in Great Britain, you can detect a change in the wedding vows that are being exchanged between spouses. And at this point, we're talking about heterosexual marriage. The Times of London reports yesterday, Sunday, that brides are now refusing to vow to what is called the inevitable. This says this: American brides are rejecting the vow to love till death do us part in favor of more cautious promises, such as one to stay together, quote, for as long as our marriage shall serve the common good, end quote. Now, how's that for a redefinition, for a compromise and indeed subversion of marriage as a permanent institution and a lifelong commitment? Let me read that again. These are vows to stay together for as long as our marriage shall serve the common good. Other updated wedding vows include those of Hollywood stars Julia Roberts and others. Julia Roberts wrote vows that included the pledge to love, support, but not obey her husband. Well, at least that was honest. It tells you something about where we are as a culture. It tells you also that these vows being exchanged are very subversive of the very idea of marriage, the integrity of marriage as an objective institution, an institution that by its very definition is to speak lifelong permanence. Traditionalists say, according to the Times, increasingly popular phrases such as "I promise to be loyal as long as love lasts" are undermining the lifelong commitment that has been at the heart of marriage since St. Paul told the Corinthians that a man and a wife are bound together unto the grave. I'm reading again from the report here. Lady Diana Spencer caused some controversy when she declined to obey the Prince of Wales on their marriage in 1981, but in America, church has been struggling to hold the line at, quote, till death do us part. Well, one observer, Mary Jo Galagos of the Association of Bridal Consultants, said, and I quote, "I cannot recall the last time I heard of a bride promise to love unto death. People are more realistic now," she says, "especially if they are on their second or third marriage." Well, I guess so. If it already didn't work, I guess the logic is, let's not have such high expectations the next time. Ladies and gentlemen, when the vows like this are absolutely revised, when you have something as honest, if as grotesque, as this updating of the marriage vows, you'll know that marriage is truly being undermined in this generation. And again, remember that marriage is not only an institution that protects a man and a woman and creates the context in which children are to be born and raised and nurtured and brought to adulthood. It is also an institution that teaches. What will children think? The little ones think? What will those little ears hear when the vows they hear exchanged no longer say till death do us part? There's more to it than that, of course. Some teenagers, some children aren't even seeing weddings. I wrote about this in my blog just a few days ago. William Raspberry wrote a fascinating op-ed column in the Washington Post. It was entitled "Why Our Black Families Are Failing." He talked about the crisis in the black family. It was a very important article. The fact that it was written by William Raspberry and published in the Washington Post says a very great deal. But he said this. He cited a youth worker who sees teenagers, quote, who've never seen a wedding. That is, marriage has become such an option and such an unused, unchosen option. Sex and procreation and child rearing have been so divorced from the institution of marriage that there are teenagers with whom this youth worker works who have never even seen a wedding. Ladies and gentlemen, we are well on our way toward cultural dissolution when a wedding becomes an amazing, an unexpected and bizarre curiosity. We are well on our way towards undermining the very foundation of the culture when we begin to rewrite the wedding vows so that till death do us part becomes so long as life shall last, or so long as this union shall serve the common good. What we desperately need in this society at this time is a return to moral sanity. It's high time. It's got to start somewhere. And that's why I believe that if we as Christians are discussing this, we need to be honest and admit that it has to start with us. It's going to have to start in the church. It's going to have to start with believers in the Lord Jesus Christ believing, affirming, and demonstrating what marriage really is. Now that would launch a true cultural revelation and a true cultural revolution. That's what we desperately need. We need Christians to be subversive against the grain of the times, against the tenor of the times, by refusing to go along and instead by showing what marriage was intended to be by God from the very beginning, recovering a true marriage ethic, and showing people why marriage is such a precious gift. Woe unto us if there are children and teenagers among us who have never seen a wedding, or if they've seen one, have heard such compromised vows. The real issue for us to face as a nation also focuses on whether or not all human life is worthy of protection. That's what's at stake in the stem cell issue, and that's what we'll talk about when we come right back. This is the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Well, there's lots to talk about. I got to tell you first that there is nothing like a summer vacation. There's nothing like spending some time with your family. And Mary and Katie and Christopher and I, we had a blast. We did all kinds of things, a lot of them associated with water. This was a big water year for the Mueller family. Christopher and I went freshwater fishing, saltwater fishing. We went successful fishing and failure fishing. We did kind of the whole thing. We caught all kinds of things. One day, caught 40 peacock bass, and it was great. It was my father and my son and I in a boat in the Everglades. It was great, complete with the alligators circling the boat, and just the wonderful things that can happen when you get three generations in one family of guys in a boat. It was just a really, really wonderful time. And then Chris and I went saltwater fishing, and my 13-year-old son caught the big redfish. And so he came back with a trophy. That was a lot of fun. I won with quantity, but he walked away with quality on that one. Just a wonderful fish. And then we had a lot of other things. We went wave running. We went boating. We did the whole thing, and just kind of ended it all with some whitewater experience on the Nantahala River in North Carolina. And that was a blast. And let me just tell you, there's nothing that will create family bonding like putting yourselves at risk for people, mom, dad, son, daughter, in one raft in a raging river. And, you know, it's one of those things where if you survive it and if your marriage survives it, you're stronger on the other side of it. And we had a tremendous time. And I would just really commend that to you. You know, we're busy people. All of us are. And sometimes you can just think you're too busy to do this kind of thing. And I can just tell you, you're really too busy not to. And your family will really, really look back and make memories. And I hope you're doing this. I hope many of you have done that already this summer. And if you haven't, there's still some time. Before you get back in the grind of everything that takes place, just make sure you take some time to go do it. You got the urge, just say yes, go do it, and make a memory. Well, as last week came to a close, on Friday, a most disappointing occurrence took place in the well of the United States Senate when the majority leader, Republican Senator Bill Frist of Tennessee, got up and gave a speech on the human embryonic stem cell research issue. Now, you know, even just a few weeks ago, we were talking on this program about the Stem Cell Research Enhancement Act of 2005. This is an effort by some senators and congressmen to force a change in President Bush's guidelines on the federal funding of human embryonic stem cell research. Back in August of 2001, just about a month before the 9/11 attacks, President Bush gave his first nationally televised primetime speech to the nation, in which he set down the rules by which the federal government would administer its funding of stem cell research. Now, stem cell research is very important. It's very promising. As a matter of fact, medical research with applications of adult stem cells have already been revolutionary. But there is real interest, almost, I would say, a fanatical interest on the part of the biomedical community of what is the potency and the potentiality of the embryonic stem cell, the human embryonic stem cell. But just get this. Just remember this before we say anything else about stem cell research. Embryonic stem cell research requires the destruction of a living human embryo. That's the bottom line. That's the base point of our discussion. Now, up until now, Senator Frist had supported President Bush's restrictions. And those restrictions back in 2001 established that there could be no federal funding for any human embryonic stem cell research that would require additional destruction of human embryos. The president authorized tax funding for research on certain embryo cell lines that dealt with embryos that had already been destroyed. Now, let me tell you right up front, That's not the policy I would have put in place. I don't think if I were president, I would have allowed even that. But President Bush did. And the moral integrity of his position was saying that there could be no further destruction incentivized by tax dollars of human embryos. Well, that wasn't enough. Those who are fanatically pressing for human embryonic stem cell research, and there are many, and they are highly mobile and highly influential, they are pushing for an expansion of federal funding. Some want to use embryos that would otherwise, they say, be discarded. These are embryos that were created in IVF clinics for those who were seeking to overcome a fertility problem. But there are others who go so far as to want to have federal funding for the creation of new human embryos that would be created simply for the process of obtaining stem cells that would require the destruction of those embryos. Now, up until last Friday, Senator Frist had supported the president's positions. And by the way, Senator Frist had a hand. Remember, he is a well-known, nationally recognized surgeon. He's a medical doctor. And he had a hand in helping the president to craft those guidelines. And so it was a shock, not only to the White House, but to all of us, when Senator Frist switched sides. I want to read to you from the speech he gave in the well of the Senate just last Friday. Here are the critical parts that that we really ought to hear clearly. He said, "I am pro-life. I believe human life begins at conception. It is at this moment that the organism is complete. Yes, immature, but complete. An embryo is nascent human life. It's genetically distinct, and it's biologically human. It's living. This position is consistent with my faith, but for me, it isn't just a matter of faith. It's a fact of science." Let's put a period there. So good so far. What Senator Frist says is that human life begins at conception. I believe that. Senator Frist says he believes that. But then he goes on to say, "I also believe that embryonic stem cell research should be encouraged and supported." He goes on to say that he believes that the president's guidelines are too strict and that there ought to be an expansion of federal funding that would mean the destruction of further human embryos, only he says it should be for those that would be otherwise discarded in IVF clinics. And he says it must be done with strict ethical guidelines. Now, here's the problem. There is a deep and unavoidable moral inconsistency in Senator Frist's position. You can't say, with consistency on the one hand, that human life begins at conception and is thus worthy of full protection, and, on the other hand, say that you support a policy that will lead to the further destruction of human embryos. This is an on the one hand, on the other hand, that cannot be put together. It is also a problem for Senator Frist to go on and talk about these ethical guidelines. Well, what ethical guidelines? These are ethical guidelines that would be written after it's already decided that you're going to destroy human embryos. That's kind of like trying to build the ethics on the other side of the crime. There's another problem. What is Senator Frist talking about when he talks about the embryo as nascent human life? The word nascent means anticipatory. It's about to become. Well, when then does he believe the human life really begins? And does nascent human life deserve less protection than, well, born human life? And this nascent human life argument, that's exactly the kind of argument you hear from abortionists about, well, a train of human development from the moment of conception until the moment of birth. And, well, that's a logic that leads to the destruction and undermining of human dignity. What is the difference between nascent human life and, well, non-nascent human life? Senator Frist never answered the very questions that he raises. And I have to tell you, he disappointed me and he disappointed many, many millions of others. This is a man who had been in full support of these guidelines, and in one day, he does a 180 turn. I want to know what you think about this. I want to know, do you think Senator Frist did the right thing? Do you agree with his policy? Do you disagree with it? What would you want to say to Senator Frist? What kind of questions would you want to ask him, and what kind of answers would you expect? The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mueller Program. We're discussing Senator William Frist of Tennessee, the majority leader in the United States Senate, and his changing position on stem cells, a 180 turn in the middle of a fierce national debate. We're told it still looks like the president's veto will be sustained, but that's now in question. A very different political terrain with this significant shift from Senator Frist. Tell us what you think. The number 877-893-8255. We'll be right back, live from Louisville, Kentucky. I'm Albert Mueller.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, sources inside the White House said that they found out about Senator Frist's swift exchange, 180 turn on this position, just a few hours before he gave the speech in the Senate. But already, it was interesting. You started getting immediate response. I was fascinated to see how many liberal newspapers immediately applauded the senator. But, you know, already they're beginning to go back and revisit that, because what the senator did was to compromise his pro-life position without actually embracing a very recognizable and coherent alternative position. And so those who are really the avid promoters of stem cell research are realizing, well, maybe he's not really with us, but who's he with? I don't know. I mean, the senator is going to have to clarify his position. But in any event, I see it as a tragic retreat from the high ground of protecting and preserving all human dignity and human life. I want to know what you think. The phone number is 877-893-8255 from Charlottesville, Virginia, home of Mr. Jefferson's University. Brian's listening on XM Satellite. Brian, welcome.
Hi. Thank you, Dr. Mohler. I wanted to make the point that I think what we saw last week with Dr. Frist was that he clearly showed us what his real-world view was by his actions on the floor of the Senate. You talk very articulately about worldviews and about how each of us have them, but they're not what we talk about. You know, it's nice to talk about worldviews, and yes, we can express what our worldview is, you know, upon self-reflection, but the proof is in the pudding, so to speak. What we really see is that your worldview is what you live.
Yeah, Brian, I really agree with you wholeheartedly. Let me ask you a question here, because I think the words really matter, and I sense that you believe that too. Do you believe, and would you argue, that to say you're pro-life, and if you're going to be consistent, you would have to oppose human embryonic stem cell research? Isn't that right?
Yes, completely. And I think I would agree with you. Language is important. We do need to communicate our worldviews in the sense of a story or in the sense of, you know, the biblical narrative. But at the same time, when it all comes down to it, it's what we live. And so often, you could say that some people live better than their worldview, but most often within Christian circles and even within my own life, I live worse than my own worldview.
Yeah, well, you know, Brian, that is a very good point, and I really appreciate you making that statement. It's honest for all of us. So let me say, I think it's almost impossible to live above your worldview. I think there are very few of us who find that we act ethically above what our prior commitments spiritually and intellectually. Thank you so much for that call, Brian, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think what we see and what we saw on Friday is the outworking of Senator Frist's worldview. There is many of us trying to figure out now what exactly that is, you know, going backwards from what he said on Friday to what he'd said before and trying to figure out what in the world has changed here. Let's go to Anniston, Alabama with Carol on the line. Carol, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dr. Mohler. It's a pleasure to speak to you personally. I just was off on vacation last week, and I was able to watch the morning show's interview, Dr. Frist, and especially Diane Sawyer when she got him on the air, and she could hardly contain herself. She was so gleeful at a Republican who had jumped ranks from the president. And I truly believe all this is finally we see that Dr. Frist is willing to do anything that he has to do to get elected president. I mean, if everybody doesn't see this for what it is, then their perception is off whack.
You know, Carol, you know, you're pointing to something that is an obvious thought. I mean, you know, when we think about the motivation for ideas, we all have to go to the setting where that motivation would come out. And certainly when you're talking about an elected public official, who, after all, is going to face the electorate again and may have higher aspirations, as Senator Frist is thought to have, then immediately you begin to think, well, maybe this is a part of it. And to be intellectually consistent, we have to say we know that's true of every elected person. And in other words, when anyone holds a position that is related to electoral prospects, we always have to intellectually and morally take that into consideration for our friends and our foes, you know, politically, so to speak. But, you know, I just have to look at this and wonder if it was a political calculation. I think it was a pretty awkward calculation. I don't think it's going to produce widespread support. You know, I believe that the American people have shown They support conviction politicians. They tend to vote for people who are very clear about what they believe and why. And I think, you know, whether you are on the party of the left or the party of the right, just in terms of worldviews in America today, the one thing you're really looking for is intellectual consistency. I can respect someone who disagrees with me, but lives consistently out of the worldview. I can disagree with him and hope he will change his mind. But what I think we all find perplexing is someone whose ideas seem disjointed and disconnected. And, for instance, in this case, you have a man, very smart, very articulate, very powerful, who says he believes in the sanctity of human life and yet wants to expand human embryonic stem cell research. Go figure. Tell me what you think. The phone number 877-893-8255, live from Louisville, Kentucky. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're discussing Senator Bill Frist, the Senate Republican leader, that is the majority leader in the U.S. Senate. He changed his position on human embryonic stem cell research on Friday, announced it in a major and rather lengthy speech before his colleagues in the United States Senate. And it has set tongues wagging and many heads shaking, just trying to figure out what exactly is going on here. 180 turn in his position. First, he helped formulate the president's guidelines and defended them right up until the end of last week. And now he's calling for a change, giving his support to the Human Embryonic Stem Cell Research Act, that is the Stem Cell Enhancement Research Act of 2005. And we'll see how that goes. But at this point, he's put himself on the line. And what we tried to look at is the fact that he said two incompatible things in the course of his speech on Friday. He said he believes that he's pro-life and that human life begins at conception. And then secondly, he said, but I believe we need to expand taxpayer-supported human embryonic stem cell research, and that would lead to the destruction of human embryos. So, you know, how that can be put together coherently, I don't know. Now, in the last segment, you know, the motivation behind this was raised as a question mark, and that's a natural question to come up in a political context. But just for this discussion, let's assume that that Senator Frist has only the most noble motivations. The question is the intellectual coherence of what he had to say. And the question is, why did he change his policy? And what does this shift mean about his larger commitments and larger worldview? I think that that is the most pressing question. Let's go to Paula calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Paula, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Mueller. Thanks for taking my call. It's a pleasure to speak to you. I just, trying not to be cynical, I just, who or what got to this man? Because he's a medical doctor, and for probably many, many years, he's believed that life begins at conception. This issue of stem cell research and abortion and all that is such a polarizing issue. Something had to happen because this is a 180 turnaround. And I don't think many people are wishy-washy. I think it's a very black and white issue. You are either for it or you're against it. I think there's very few people walking down the middle of the road. So it boggles my mind that someone can just turn.
Yes.
And I don't mean to be cynical, but that's one of the first things when I heard your show come on today that I thought, okay, what happened to him? Something happened, and if it's aspirations of the presidency, okay. But, and I'm not sure that that's what it is.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to wait and see. I think that picture is going to become more clear, Paula, over time. You know, I don't often quote Lily Tomlin, but I am today. My favorite line from Lily Tomlin is this: I'm trying to be cynical, but it's hard to keep up. I mean, you know, this kind of political development is what raises that kind of irony. It's hard to be cynical, adequately cynical in times like these, because there's so many different opportunities for acute disappointment, and this is one of them. But, you know, what really puzzles me in many ways, Paula, and it's appropriate you call from Tampa, Florida, because just a few miles away from where you are, Terry Schiavo died, a court-ordered death. And you'll remember that Senator Bill Frist very articulately, and I would argue very courageously, entered into that political battle on behalf of human life. And so, you know, this is a man who has demonstrated in times past a very clear commitment to the sanctity of human life. And all I can tell you is I hope he returns to that commitment. I hope that he thinks this through and returns to that commitment, goes back to believing that the human embryo, that which he defines as nascent human life, is fully worthy of protection, and thus we must not destroy any further human embryos, no matter how lofty is claimed to be the cause. Thanks for your call, Paul. Let's go to Dave calling from Cleveland, Ohio, listening on WHKW. Dave, go right ahead.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. Thanks for having me on today. My first thought when I heard this was that I thought back to when Dr. Frist was up for the position of Senate Majority Leader, and I know there were some questions at that time as to what his position on abortion was, and I'm still not really sure when. It kind of was a with me anyway, it was gradual as to kind of accepting him as being pro-life and being committed to the cause, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, when did that really happen, or did it ever really happen, or is he kind of just showing what his true beliefs are or have been the whole time?
Well, I think only Senator Frist can make that clear, and he's going to have to. I mean, the political context is going to mean that he's going to be required to be very clear about this, not only to his own citizens in Tennessee and to the citizens of the country, but to his own colleagues. For instance, a very clear response to Senator Frist came from Senator Rick Santorum, Republican senator from Pennsylvania. Let's just listen to what he had to say.
I don't think that a society as great and as rich and as prosperous and as blessed as this society should sacrifice the least among us for the purpose of science, for the purpose of research.
Now, that statement was made directly as a response to Senator Frist, and, you know, because of that, I think you can see that in the Republican caucus, there's going to be a very lively debate about this. Dave, you raised the issue of when he was elected majority leader, and, you know, when Senator Frist was first elected to the U.S. Senate, there was some question about exactly where he stood on some pro-life issues, and he really kind of firmed up those positions. I think there are going to be some questions now. And again, without even getting into the motivation questions, there's simple intellectual consistency questions here. And there's the question in terms of just how adequately Senator Frist represents Republican positions on these issues, especially as adopted, for instance, in the party's platform. That was very clearly articulated just last year in light of the national election. Dave, thanks for your call. Let's go to Kerry calling from Chicago, Illinois, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Kerry, go right ahead.
Hello, Dr. Mueller. Thanks for taking my call. I echo a lot of the same sentiments that have already been voiced today. When I heard the news that Senator Frist was going to announce that, I was extremely disappointed, and it makes me wonder if there's a spiritual blind spot somewhere.
Yes, Kerry, you mean within the senator, within his own worldview?
Yeah, I believe you said it earlier that it's difficult to reconcile the two positions that he has. Certainly a man of faith would have a hard time reconciling that with God's word. It's impossible to reconcile those two positions. And I just wonder if there's a spiritual blind spot somewhere there. You alluded to political aspirations, and time will tell whether that's the case.
Yeah, you know, Kerry, let's admit something right up front, and that is that we are fallible, frail human beings. We are sinners, and that sin has corrupted our intelligence and our intellectualizing, our intellectual capacity as much as anything else. And that's why, being sinners, we are prone to contradiction and inadequate thinking. That's why we need to be constrained and educated by the Word of God, and that's why we need to be, well, in accountability to the Church of the Lord Jesus Christ as the body of believers to help think through these issues together on the basis of biblical authority and Christian truth. And I can only hope that that will be a corrective when it comes to Senator Bill Frist and his position on stem cell research. We need to pray humbly that each of us will be corrected where we come up short in worldview, in thought, and in action. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment, live from Louisville, Kentucky. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Well, it has been a fascinating discussion about a very, very pressing issue. We've been talking about Senator Bill Frist and his switch of positions, change of positions on the human embryonic stem cell research issue. And we've been trying to figure it out. And what I'm really proud of today is the fact that with the callers and our conversation and our focus, we've really dealt with the worldview issues and why it matters. What we've seen is that when you start from a position, if you're going to be consistent, you have to work out its implications. And when Senator Bill Frist begins in his speech by making the point that he's pro-life and he begins, the human life begins at conception, then intellectual consistency is going to require him then to oppose any further destruction of human embryos for the sake of medical research or any other cause. If human life is possessing human dignity and all human life possesses equal human dignity, then the embryo is as deserving of our protection as any other form of human life. Now, if the embryo is something less than full human life and thus possesses something less than full human dignity, then another moral consequence would result. And that's the slippery slope. That's the problem. When Senator Frist refers to the embryo as nascent human life, we have to wonder what he means there. Because that is a very, very dangerous terminology to refer to the embryo as nascent human life. It either is human life or it isn't. It either deserves protection or it doesn't. And that's the problem. That's why the position that Senator Frist articulated won't hold. It won't hold water for those on either side who are either the proponents or the opponents of embryonic stem cell research. And that's why already you can see a lot of people from both sides beginning to wonder, what in the world did he really say? What does he really mean? And why does it really matter? Well, it matters because this is the majority leader of the United States Senate. This is a man who has enormous personal control and authority over the flow of legislation and the formation and construction of legislation in the United States Senate. And it's also important because this is the man who, at the very top of the hierarchy of his party, is to articulate the positions held by that party. And for that reason, this is an issue of interest to all in his own party and to all who are wondering what in the world that party, the Republican Party, stands for when it comes to the sanctity of human life. I think there's going to be some clarification in days ahead. It's going to be necessary. His colleagues are going to demand it, his constituents are going to demand it, and the times are going to demand it. But I can only hope, and we must pray, that he will return to the position he held prior, the position that honors the full integrity and dignity and sanctity of human life. On this program, every day we try to talk about what matters and to frame the issue in a way that leads to intelligent human conversation. We had great callers on an important issue today, and I hope you'll get ready to listen and to call in a day ahead. It's good to be back with you. We'll meet you again tomorrow. I'm Albert Moeller.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.